Anybody else got a question? Okay. Okay, so there's three of these. Assuming I get to the third one. This one is going to be about values. Why? Well, we know, most of you, I hope, maybe not, some of you have been in the other classes. We know that we're talking about the economy, which means we're talking about production, allocation, consumption. It means that we're talking about institutions with role structures. If we're talking about vision, it must mean that what we're saying, I mean, you know, people just have a hard time thinking about what it means to think about a vision, but it's not all such a big deal. It must mean that we're trying to figure out how do we accomplish production, consumption, allocation in ways that provide the stuff that meets people's needs and let them develop their, you know, their fullest selves, produce the stuff, distribute the stuff. How do we accomplish production, consumption, allocation? And how do we do it in ways that further values that we hold dear instead of imposing all sorts of crap on us, right? So that's what we're trying to do. So if that's what we're trying to do, the first thing that we have to do is decide
what our values are.
What the values are that we hold dear. And we have to do it in a way which is going to be sufficient to guide us in figuring out what the institution should look like in order to propel the values. So, do we want a list of 100 values? No, why not? I mean, we can think up 100 values. We could work on it for a while and think up 100 values. We had 100 values. I mean, why not?
Each decision will have to cross-check it with like 100 values?
Yeah, in essence, that's all it is. I mean, really, this stuff, you know, everybody tries to mystify it. Not a good idea, because then when we start trying to figure out institutions, we just have too much. Right? We'll be at it for 47 years to try and cross-check with every one of the 100 values. So what do we want to do? We want a short list of values, which has what quality?
All-encompassing.
Somehow, we want a short list of values, which is such that if we succeed in figuring out institutions that fulfill those values, it will be all-encompassing. Even though we didn't try to fulfill some other value, when we look later, we'll see that we did. That's not so easy. But that's what we want to do. We want to come up with a short list of values, which is also instructive, which have such a richness that they can inform the way we think about it. All right. What we're doing is basically we're doing the thing that Robin Hanel and I did when we did this, except we're going to do it, you know, in a few hours, and Robin and I did it in a few years. And you're going to wonder, why the hell did it take a few years? And it's not obvious what the answer to that question is. Actually, it is obvious. I think the answer to the question is not that we were trying to do something that was hard, like build a big building, you know, by hand or something, or complex, like solve, you know, a gigantic differential equations problem or something like that. The only thing that's hard about it is that it's other than what we're used to, that you have to overcome and get past what's the habitual responses, right, which are, of course, molded by what's all around us. That's the only hard part. Okay, so let's do what you said we have to do. We have to figure out some values. One way to think about what values? One way to think about this is we're talking about economy. So what's the first thing that comes to mind as a value that's associated with economy or an area of concern that we have to have a value for?
How
to
do with economy?
What?
Productivity.
Well, maybe. I don't know. Does that really strike you as the first thing? So our value is going to be what? Big?
You see what I'm saying? Wealth.
So wealth and income, and the value is? Equity. Okay, we got the first one right off. We're Robin and I now, 5 months down the road, sweating like crazy. Equity, you got it in 17 seconds. Okay, so we got equity. Well, okay, so it's going to take you another 30 seconds. No, it'll take you a little more than that. It'll take the hour and a half. Okay, so we got equity. We don't know what it means, but intuitively we all smile and say, yeah. Right? Why? Because we're coming up with a value about what? About precisely what you said before you said equity, about distribution, about sort of the distribution of income and circumstances. We're trying to come up with a value that bears upon that, distribution of income and circumstances. And the value that we come up with is equity, and we still have to figure out what the hell equity is. Right? Okay, and isn't there another thing, like distribution of income and circumstances? What else goes on in the economy? Little people? What are they doing?
Credit.
Huh? Little people, or maybe...
Trading?
Solidarity.
Whoa! This led to that immediately? I'm impressed with either me or you. Solidarity. So one of us did something really good just then. Because I was thinking to myself, what the fuck are you doing? And you came right up with solidarity. Okay, so
is that what that one was supposed to be?
Yes, solidarity. It's supposed to be relations among people, obviously. See, if you use the concepts, right? What's an economy? Well, it's production, consumption, allocation. It's institutions, and the institutions have social relations, so we got to have a value about social relations. And the value about social relations, solidarity. And everybody thinks they know what it means, and we'll see whether we do or not. But let's move on for a second. What's the next thing? I'm trying to think of some. If anybody gets that. Or this. It's
hierarchy of class?
No, not hierarchy.
Distribution?
What is it that what goes on in the economy, we got to have a value about it. Anytime anything economic happens, something happens.
Trade.
Something happens. Or else the economic thing wouldn't have happened.
Production
value.
This is becoming.
I like this
working
better.
Conditions.
Yeah, this was better, you think, huh?
Labor.
Look, if we are an economy and we're either going to do this or we're going to do this.
Choice,
yeah?
Decisions.
We've got to have some kind of a value about decisions. So what's the value we have decisions?
Participatory.
Oh, geez, just the random person on the street. Okay, participatory what? Participatory self-management. Let's call it participatory self-management. We'll come back to it.
We're at the top of
the net. We're in a hurry. So we'll call it participatory self-management, but we're looking for a value that's associated with decision-making, and we'll come back to it. Okay, now the fourth one, I don't know whether we put this in because we knew if we didn't put this in, we'd get punched out, or because it was real. But we sort of thought to ourselves, well, wait a minute. Can we quickly come up with institutional relations that'll do solidarity, equity, participatory self-management? Oh, yeah, I got it. What we'll do is we'll have everybody do exactly the same thing as everybody else, exactly the same income, and have exactly the same say. Does anybody want to live in this society? But it accomplishes equity, solidarity, and self-management. What's missing?
Diversity.
Okay, we're done. So we now have four values. We have solidarity, equity, participatory self-management, and diversity. We needed diversity in this odd construction, this odd approach. We might have it first, but we got it fourth, which is what Robin and I did. We needed it because there was an obnoxious solution to meeting the other three, right? Just homogenize everything. Which is what? Which corresponds to what? It corresponds to the popular image, you know, Chinese conformity in the old days, right? That's exactly the image of socialism that was tried to be put across. Yeah, sure, we can have solidarity, you know, everybody marching lockstep. Okay, so we don't want that, so we have diversity. All right, so let's go back to the values. What's solidarity?
The idea that everyone's got together, kind of collective self-interest.
Collective self-interest. Okay, that's an interesting formulation. Solidarity. So at the lowest level, solidarity is that when I am making, and when I'm sort of operating, I'm doing what? I'm concerned with just me?
No, everyone else.
Everyone else. And why everyone else? Because what?
It affects you.
Because it affects me. Okay, so one reason, one kind of solidarity is I'm concerned about everybody else because I know that what's happening affects me. So it's still based upon me, right? Not bad. Certainly better than anything we have to look around at. What's the higher level of solidarity?
When it affects other people.
Yeah, and I'm concerned about other people, whether I affect them or not. Why?
Because they're other people.
Yeah, that's a modest sort of notion. I'm concerned about them not because it's going to benefit me, but because I honestly have solidarity with them. I want to benefit them, right? A higher level, empathy. Some kind of human empathy, you know, of, okay.
Although it could still be self-interested if you make that.
All right, yeah, if you want to, and that's exactly the kind of thing I don't want to do. That's exactly the thing that leads to 4 days of discussions or 3 months with me and Robin missing the point, right? Not getting any place. And so you circle around, you do all this highfalutin philosophy, and then you get back and find the simplest answer. All right, so we're just going to skip all the craziness. So solidarity, we already have, right? Now, but what does it mean to say we wanted this a value of the economy? We know what it is now, right? People being concerned about other people. It could be because that's the way to advance yourself, and it could be because you have literal empathy, but in any case, solidarity. But what does it mean to say that what does it mean to say that that's a value that we're going to employ in thinking about the economy?
Where in constructing an economy where your helping other people doesn't punish you? Like, if you...
Whatever. It means that when we think about constructing the economy, we're going to want to build into the economy not only that it doesn't, that it isn't antisocial, right? But in the positive direction, that participation in the role structures of the economy causes you to behave in solidaristic ways. That's, you know, in other words, it pushes you. It propels the values we hold dear. Okay. So the second one, what is equity? This is harder. Let's pursue solidarity 1 second more. Suppose you're having imagine in your mind you're having a discussion with, you know, the worst nightmare person you know from the point of view of their resistance to the left. Okay? Got this person envisioned?
Mm-hmm.
Cool. So you're having a debate about what you want, and you say, well, the first value that I want is solidarity. And the person says, ah. And so you say, well, wait a minute now. If we have an economy, and everything else, and another economy, A and B, and everything about A and B is the same, except B causes people to have empathy for one another and to be concerned about one another, and A causes people to step on one another, right? Which is better? Well, I don't care who the person is who you're talking to. Unless they're pathological, they're going to say this one, right? If it's got the same output and it's got everybody gets the same material stuff, and everybody's, you know, in other words, if you get the same results, but you can get it with solidarity, it's certainly getting it better than getting it without solidarity. Who's going to deny that? Actually, nobody. I honestly think, you have to think about it. But so far, we can make our case, well, just about to anybody. You don't need to be, you know. All right, so now what's the second one? This won't always be true. What's the second one, equity?
Ensure we meet everybody's needs before we worry about
okay, that's one formulation, but I don't think, remember, we're going to try and find a formulation that's going to guide us, right? That's going to guide us in figuring out the economy. So we need kind of a norm, we need kind of a principle that embodies equity. And we're talking about income distribution, so it's a norm of remuneration. You know, why should people receive anything? Do we know in our gut, that is to say, suppose the two of you are in a workplace, you're working in a smelly room and working hard and tired at the end of the day, and you're upstairs with a big window and your feet up on the desk figuring out what she's going to do. Now, what's our notion of what the reward should be, the remuneration? Right? In other words, should we remunerate you the same? Should we remunerate you more and you less, or you more and you less? Anybody?
In the worst conditions,
okay, does everybody agree that that's moral? That's ethically superior, right? So so for the moment, if we're looking for the moral, the right choice, the value that we aspire to, but now what is the norm there? What have we done? This isn't so easy. In other words, what is the norm that's guiding how we're doing this? We know sort of in our gut, but how do we enunciate this in a principle?
So you want a quality of, like, opportunity so that everyone, if they work hard, can do well?
Equity of opportunity. Let me give you a little. You know what a land rush is? You know, the old days?
Mm-hmm.
Land rush? Everybody lines up at the border of Oklahoma or something, and the land is all out there, and they rush off to get the land, and you get what you get, right? So, what would be equity of opportunity? What would we do in order to make it equity of opportunity in a land rush? No, that's not equal opportunity means that when we're standing on the line, what happens?
Everybody has the same means to get to the end.
Right, and if we really want to make it, this is what, like in horse racing or in sailboat racing, if we really want to make it equal opportunity, not only do we say you can't have a car and you can't have a carriage or you can't have this, but suppose you're all on horses, then we got to give you equal weights and everything else. So suppose we just make it completely equal opportunity, right? And we do it. Are we satisfied?
No.
Why?
Some people are faster.
We're handicapped. The people who are faster have to carry weights.
People still aren't going to necessarily be happy with what they get.
Like, because
some positions are better or perceived as better than others. And
well, what if they are better? In other words, there's plots of land out there that are really good and plots of land that are a piece of shit. Now we've made it the case that who gets what will be random. right? Or a function of how hard they run, or whatever, right? But still, we have unequal outcomes.
But didn't you say you wanted it as a function of how hard they ran?
Well, we want remuneration, but not necessarily getting the equivalent of something huge and the equivalent of something shitty. Yes, you're right, but let's hold on that for a minute. We don't necessarily, we want equitable outcomes, not just equitable conditions at the start of the race. Right? So, we want to actually have equitable outcomes, equitable parcels of land. Right? So, let's go back to what equity is. That wasn't the answer to the question. What's equity of remuneration? Suppose we're handing out apples and oranges, I guess. So, we hand out apples and oranges, and you get 10 apples, and you get 3 apples. And now I'm about to hand out oranges, right? Do I hand out 3 and 3? No. What do I do?
7 and 3. 7 and 3.
Maybe 7 and 3. But is it really 7 and 3? Depends upon what? How much apples and oranges
exchange
for, but really how much benefit they give to people. What are we trying to equilibrate? We all know it makes sense. If it was 3 and 7 apples, that should be, you know, some number more in the opposite direction for the bananas. Because we're trying to do what? We're trying to equilibrate the outcome. Not apples or bananas, but the sum total. Right? Over here, remember, you were working in the shitty, you were working in the good. We gave you more money, we gave you less money. What are we trying to equilibrate? Just apples and oranges. What are we trying to equilibrate? We're trying to equilibrate the overall impact of the economic activity. Your economic life is partly the income and partly the activity that you're doing. If you're doing activity that is less fulfilling, right, then you got to have more income. So the sum total of the two is equitable with the sum total of the other person's two. Is this getting across? The reason that you give more income to the person who was in the smelly room than the person who was upstairs looking out the window is because you're offsetting the fact they were suffering more. And you're giving this total impact of the money, of the income, plus the work, right, plus the labor, the sum total impact is what is equilibrated. Its impact on our human well-being and development as best you can. Is this clear?
Well, I guess I have a question, like, okay, say someone pays a lot of money for education, like to really get... Because what we're talking about is actually like why people originally are not being paid.
Slow down.
Sorry.
We're going to do what you're saying.
Okay.
I promise you, okay? But it's too soon.
Okay.
All we're talking about right now is a value. We're not talking about implementing it yet.
Okay.
And we're not talking about whether implementing it leads to other problems, although we'll begin to do that very shortly.
Okay.
All right. So, but the people get what the value is here. The value is that we're equilibrating the overall situation, just like we're equilibrating not apples for each of you, not oranges for each of you, but the sum effect of apples and oranges, even though you might have a different combination. Here we're equilibrating not work conditions, not income, but the sum effect of work conditions and income, even though you might have different of each. The sum, you see? So what are we rewarding? It turns out we're rewarding effort and sacrifice. That's how you do that. If you reward effort and sacrifice, more effort and sacrifice, more income, less effort and sacrifice, less income, that's the same as saying we are equilibrating the sum total impact of the work you do, the effort and sacrifice, plus the income.
But the two groups of apples and oranges, they're different. I mean, just because...
So is effort and sacrifice and income.
Yeah, but like apples might be more nutritious. Oranges might have more vitamin C. I mean, there's different effects of it. There is a...
Okay, let's not overburden the analogy. You're right. But so what? I mean, let's go back to here. So there's effort and sacrifice and there's income. And what we're saying is we know effort and sacrifice affects fulfillment and development, and we know income affects fulfillment and development.
How do you define effort and sacrifice?
Well, we'll have to come to that. In other words, all we have now is the value. How do we figure out what it is in institutional terms so that we can do it?
Mm-hmm.
That's a problem. But so far, we not... See, one of the things about doing vision is you're not going to succeed if you keep trying to have the final answer when you're at the first step. Because you won't have it, and you'll get frustrated and stop. Because you'll feel like you'll never get there. You know what I'm saying? You're doing kinship vision. You want the final answer at the first step when you're first enunciating values. If you don't have the final answer, you'll give up on the values instantly. Let's just decide what the hell we want. We'll worry later about whether we can do it, right? All right, so, and obviously, you know, I think we can do it. All right, so we want to reward, we want to remunerate, reward, effort, and sacrifice. What about this decision-making norm? What is it? We called it participatory self-management. What is it?
You participate to the degree you're affected by a decision.
It seems to me that it makes sense that we want as our norm that your influence on decisions should be proportionate to the extent that the decision affects you. There's an easy ways to see this. One easy way to see it is, well, I mean, I don't want people deciding whether or not I wear this shirt or another one this morning, and we all agree that they shouldn't be. In other words, it's a dictatorship. We actually believe in dictatorship, right? We do. We believe I should have a dictatorial say in that decision. We all believe in dictatorship sometimes. But why? Because it affects me so overwhelmingly and nobody else very much, right? So that's why we believe in it in that case, or, you know, other cases. And then there are other decisions that affect many people, and therefore many people should have an influence. How much influence? An influence proportional to the effect on them. If you have anything other than that, what you have is some people influencing the decision more than it influences them, and other people influencing the decision less than it influences them. Well, that's just immoral, right? That's on what possible grounds? On grounds that they're not humans? Well, okay, if we're talking about whether or not we should, I don't know, that our dog should have the same decision as we have, okay. But if we're talking about other humans, there's no reason. Right? Hopefully people will agree with that. I don't want to spend too long on it.
On what grounds are the decisions that are being made? Like, on what grounds are we deciding if that person is affected?
That's the same question again. You're saying, can we do it? Can we implement this value? Can we even figure out what it means in more detail? Can we set up institutions to do it? Perfectly reasonable questions, but give us a little time. Okay. Yeah.
I've had an argument with people before about this kind of idea because they say in my county, in LA County, they have everybody votes on property taxes for homeowners, and that supports education funding. And property owners say that they should be the only ones to vote on these issues because it's the thing that affects.
Yeah, but this is also the only time in their entire lives when they will use that argument, and they're using it incorrectly since it does affect everybody else, and they shouldn't have the property in the first place. So I don't want to spend too much time talking about it, okay? But let's just go ahead and we'll see, and then you can apply it to a case like that without much trouble. Yeah, that's true. But now let's go back and ask what for solidarity, we said that you can argue with anybody about it, and they're going to have to agree with you or else be pathological, right? I mean, we'd rather have an economy in which everybody, the total amount of output is the same and everything else, and we'd rather that people hate each other. You're not going to run into that. But equity, you will, right? What will people say, you know, that they prefer to remunerating effort and sacrifice? Well, they might say they prefer remunerating capital, right? Ownership. They might say they prefer remunerating what else?
Abilities, talent.
Which is to say output, right? The amount you contribute to the output. And there's one other.
Education.
Well,
the level of education versus.
But only insofar as output goes over there. Or it might go into effort and sacrifice, because I might reward it too, because we reward effort and sacrifice if it's onerous, right? We're going to do a lot more of that. No. Power. What do you reward in our economy? Bargaining power, right? So, although most people won't come out and say we should have the Genghis Khan principle of reward, right, in which power is rewarded, that's what we have, right? Most people will actually say either property, which is no more moral than that, and or output.
Although all they're saying, what they might make the case for is that all they're saying then is that you should reward effort and sacrifice, but in a kind of family dynasty sort of way, you know?
Well, but it's not effort and sacrifice. Yeah. You mean for profit, property. That might be what they're arguing, but then you can twist them into a good position, right?
Yeah.
There's a guy, who knows who Milton Friedman is? Okay, so Milton Friedman is a famous Nobel Prize winning economist, right? Milton Friedman has a little debate with the left, and he says, okay, you leftists say that I should probably do this next time, but you leftists say, since I got started, you leftists say we shouldn't reward property, right? And the reason you say we shouldn't reward property is because the person didn't really do anything, right? There's no moral, nor even incentive basis for that. You can't change your parents, right? The fact that we're going to give you all this because you have good parents, but you can't change that. You had nothing to do with that. Why should you be rewarded for that? for inheriting property, et cetera, et cetera. He says, that's what you left to say. And it's true, some left to say that. So then he says, well, wait a minute, I don't understand something. Why then should we reward output? Why should we give more to the person who has some talent, to Mozart, than Salieri, a not as accomplished composer, to Einstein as compared to somebody, right? Why should we reward the genetic lottery, says Friedman. The person didn't do anything to get it, right? There's no moral reason to do it. Why should we reward that? You people are crazy. And lots of leftists fall by the wayside, and I say back, no, I agree with you. We shouldn't reward that either. Right? We should reward effort and sacrifice. Not, why should we give more to somebody who was born already lucky in the genetic lottery? Right? Why do you get more just because you're big and strong and you can be a linebacker or whatever it is, or you can cut more cane? We're going
to
do more.
What does Friedman
time.
Say to that when you say that to him?
Nothing. He just now he thinks he's dealing with a lunatic.
But he could just make the argument that you can't quantify effort and sacrifice.
He might, but now we're back over here, right? And now we have to see. All right. But what's the real, supposing you're arguing with a normal human being, if you argue solidarity, you argue equity, you're saying the situation is better if we've equilibrated the overall impact of economics on people or not, or people having the right say or not. What's the real reason why a sensitive, normal human being would say, well, I sort of like your values, but, you know, who cares, right? There's no point in thinking about anything because what? Because the trade-off is bad. That's what you're really going to encounter. What you're really going to encounter is the person who's going to say, sure, if you could do economics and get us all the good stuff, and we can all have the good stuff, and we can also have more solidarity, more equity, more participatory self-management, more diversity, that would be nice, but you can't. In order to get all those things, you're going to have a trade-off. You're going to have to give away tons of the output in order to have these values. That's the real resistance, the honest resistance to the left. Suppose it was true. Suppose it was true that in order to have these values, we got to go back to living off the land, you know, and dying at the age of 33. Well, we can vote on which we prefer, right? What we have, or dying at the age of 33 with a little more solidarity, equity, participatory, you know, I'll opt for now. I'd rather live to 70. So, you see what I'm saying? So most people don't like it if there's a gigantic trade-off. But that gets us again to the institutional question. What's a different way of talking about the value that we want to have guide? What's the historically typical way of talking about the value that we want to guide our thinking about an economic vision? What's the historically? It's none of those four values. It's one word. We want to attain
efficiency.
This is on the left. On the left. Classlessness. Historically, the good economy is the classless economy, right? So they've done one better. I said I wanted to have a short, comprehensive list of values that could guide our thinking about economic vision. So they got it down to one, right? But is it an improvement over ours? Are we better off being guided by the value classlessness or by the four things that I said? I think the four things, because I think it's far more instructive. But let's see whether it overlaps. Suppose we have classes. Do we have solidarity? No. Do we have equity? No. Do we have participatory self-management? No. Do we have diversity? Yes. You know, okay. So we might have some diversity, we may not. But we're going to see in a minute when we look at economies why that's minimized. But in any case, it seems pretty clear that if we have our values, we've incorporated classlessness. We certainly haven't missed it. And I think we've gone well further than it because, of course, Marxist-Leninists say classlessness, but what do they come up with? A society that's got a ruling class. Now, why is that? Well, because they didn't have a label for the class. We'll see in a minute. Let's judge capitalism by these values. Does capitalism have solidarity? Why not? We're going to determine whether or not you can argue with somebody and prove to them that they should be a revolutionary or depressed. Right? That's what I mean. I think you can talk with somebody, and if they're calm and reasoned, you can prove to them that they should either be a revolutionary or crying, one or the other. Right, and so here's the way we're going to do that. So we're talking about capitalism. Oh, really? I'm serious. So we're talking about capitalism, and we ask whether capitalism promotes, because you just finished getting them to agree that solidarity would be nice, equity would be disposed, and it's certainly if they're remotely humane, right? They're going to. It's hard to argue against these values if you're humane, right? What's the ground? What we should just The grounds on which you argue against equity because you're humane is if you honestly think that it's a good idea to reward, you know, force or property or output is the one that we're going to have to deal with in some detail. The participatory self-management one, the only grounds upon which to argue against that is what? Think about it for a second now. It says that people should have input into decisions in proportion as they're affected by them. If you're arguing against that, then you must be arguing for a situation in which some people, maybe very few, have way more or more, and some have less. Now, what possible? There's only one grounds upon which to argue for that I can think of. What?
Well, some people are more capable of ruling.
So you're arguing against it because of trade-off, because you think you'll get better decisions.
Yeah.
Okay. And we'll have to deal with that. And you have to deal with that. You can't just dismiss that and say the person is you know, that makes you an inhuman slug, because you think, what if it was true that by having participatory self-management you'd get such bad decisions that you'd all starve? You know, all right, we think it's silly, but you have to make a case. All right, and diversity, I don't think anybody argues against. All right, capitalism, solidarity. Come on, this should be easy by now. Huh?
Competition?
Yeah. I mean, the quick way to say that solidarity isn't a function of capitalism is that capitalism is a market system, and markets do what? Markets produce buyers and sellers that are literally opposed. It is the exact opposite of solidarity. It creates insular, atomistic, individualistic mindsets, because that's the only way to get ahead. So it's the exact opposite of solidarity. It doesn't just not propel it, it propels its opposite. So it sucks on that score. Equity. Equity. Come on, does capitalism promote equity?
No.
Why not?
It requires unequal distribution.
So the first thing it does is it has property. And the people who have the property have, what, 1% of them have 90% of it. So there goes equity, down the drain, right? Rapidly circling down the drain. And you can't get too much more unequal. In fact, if you look through all history, it's hard to find more inequality than Bill Gates and the people who live in, you know, the upper east side of New York or something. I mean, in fact, it's just look in the upper east side of New York, right? So within about a mile, we have East Harlem, and we have the Upper East Side of New York. And the Upper East Side of New York, the average income, you know, ballpark $100,000, $120,000, $150,000, maybe it's $200,000 for all I know. East Harlem, ballpark family income, $6,000, right? So that's a mile apart. Equity? All right, so why is there that differential all over the place? Why is there, and then Bill Gates, you know, so a factor of 50 here and in disposable income, 2,000, you know, a huge factor, because there's no disposable income, there's just, and then Bill Gates, you know, now a factor of 146 billion. So why is there this differential? Well, partly it's because of private ownership, and partly it's because of
class
and the class division between
coordinating classes and
the coordinating class and the working class. And then there's also other factors like straight out unemployment, so you're in the working class and you're even lower, right? And then there's other factors like race and gender, but that's not capitalism. That's just capitalism in a real historical setting where it all has that. It doesn't have to. Okay, so capitalism, equity, forget it, right? Pathetic on equity. Participatory self-management? Why is that gone? Well, it's gone same reason. The capitalists have ultimate control over everything in the economy. That's so much for having equal influence. They have overwhelming influence. And the other class has, again, vastly disproportionate influence, and then there's a set of people who have virtually no say. They work in a dictatorship. Workers basically function in a dictatorship for their working life. Right? We still have dictatorships. From their point of view, the corporation is a dictatorship. Right? It's. I mean, even Stalin couldn't tell people when to go to the bathroom. Just think about it. Right? I mean, so 8 hours a day, 40 hours a week, or 50 or 60 hours a week, you're in a situation where somebody can tell you whether you can or can't go to the bathroom. Stalinism never had that. Right? No political dictatorship has had that kind of control. So most people live in a situation in which they have virtually no say over anything in the economy. Diversity? Capitalism? How the hell do we think about this? I'm not so sure I'm right about this, but this is what I would say. if you want to take up a test for whether there's diversity or there isn't diversity, one way to think of it is diversity means lots of options and random distribution among them. You know, you can't, it means you can't predict. So if I say think in terms of that example of, you know, Chinese homogenization, except it was never there, but think, you know, that image of socialism as homogenization. What can you do? You can predict what everybody's doing at any given moment. Why? Because there's only one thing to be doing. So you can say, I know that Bill will be doing it and Sally and Sue will be doing it because everybody is doing it. Now, if there's many, many things to be doing, and if it isn't the case that it's, you know, if it's just distributed, it's diverse, you can't predict. You see that? You see what I'm saying? Is that clear? It's a sort of a mathematical approach to it. Now you ask what you can predict in the U.S. Is the U.S., and everybody thinks the U.S. is a tremendous diversity. Is the U.S. predictable?
Yes.
Well, what time of day is predictable, for example?
9 o'clock
at night. Yeah, I mean, first of all, you can predict with a tremendous, you know, what's going on at night, what people are watching, what numbers of people are watching it. But it's more than that, because that would just be, that could be random. It's what classes and what genders and what they're doing. There's tremendous homogenization, right? Because there's homogenization of tastes and preferences and styles and everything else. So there's actually not such diversity as everybody thinks. There's a real homogenization. Let me give you one example of how homogenization occurs. Barnes & Noble decides to open 4 big bookstores in some part of Ohio. Why do they open 4 of them? They open in these huge bookstores. What happens? What's one thing that happens?
All the other bookstores go out of business.
All right, so all the other bookstores in the area goes out of business because they're outdone by these bookstores. But how do these bookstores outdo them?
Volume
and diversity. That is, each of these bookstores carries everything. And they open these bookstores up, and everything that any of these independent bookstores had, including all the political books and all everything that you can imagine, are in these stores, right? And they're also, you know, they're convenient, they're easy, they have bigger sales, et cetera, et cetera. So gone with all the independent bookstores. Now what happens?
Then they stop carrying the other books?
Yeah. So you can guess the answer from knowing what I'm going to do, right? They might even close 3 of them. Because there's no problem. The fact that you're further away now doesn't mean that you won't go to it, because why? There's nothing else to go to, right? So, and why can they close? Why can they reduce the number of books? Because people really want to read. So since people really want to read, if there's a really wide selection, we'll choose from the selection and attune with our choices, or with our preferences. But if there's a smaller selection, what will we do? We'll simply mold our taste. That's what we talked about when we did consumption. Right? We still want to read. We want to get the pleasure of reading. So even though it's a smaller selection, we'll just read. So that we'll have big, huge sellers. Now, why does this happen under capitalism? I mean, why would anybody be driven to do this? Why do you want? It's because there's tremendous economy, because you can make more profits from the huge seller than you can make from a whole lot of small sellers, because there's economies of scale in the printing and everything else. Right? But it's just to give a feeling for another dynamic by which you get homogenization and you get rid of diversity. And this one is a vicious one, but, and it's conscious, yeah.
I guess I'm not really clear on how capitalism is more conducive to homogeneity than the system we're talking about. Because earlier you said, like, the first 3, if you just had those first 3, you thought it would be homogenous. But then you throw diversity in there, and then all of a sudden the whole system has, you know, this other slant of it. How is capitalism more conducive to having a homogenous thing than this other system would be?
I didn't say that. I just said that it's bad. I'm not comparing any two systems yet.
Okay.
All I said is that capitalism is bad on diversity and horrible on the others.
Okay.
Okay? That's all.
Okay.
And since it's bad on diversity and horrible on the others, if we think that, what do we think? We think we want another economy. And what does that make us?
Revolutionary.
And what's the only reason not to be that?
Those are crying.
We think we can't do it. And why can't we do it? Because either it's impossible, or because if we did figure out a way of doing it, a way of engendering solidarity, equity, participatory self-management, and diversity from economic institutions that were accomplishing production, consumption, and allocation, if we did figure out a way of doing it, we wouldn't want to do it, and therefore what would be the reason why we wouldn't want to do it?
It'd make things worse,
because it wouldn't produce anything. Would be chaos, or it would take too much of our time, or something. Exactly what people say, you know. Yeah, I don't mind that you want those values, but you also want me to be poor, right? Or you also want me to be regimented, or you also, et cetera, et cetera. So you either are revolutionary or you're chronic. All right, so it wasn't so fun. All right. So now let's look at market socialism. What's market socialism? From the point of view, why are we looking at this? We're thinking about an economic vision. Well, there's no point in wasting our time. Right? That is to say, if capitalism is a good economic vision, let's just stop right there. If it's not, let's look at the other ones that are on the table, right? That are out there on the table. I don't want to spend a whole lot of time trying to figure out a new economy if we've already got one that we should be aspiring to. Right? So we've got to at least look at the ones that exist. So what's market socialism? Well, what's the socialism part mean? First of all, what country are we, you know, should pop into mind as market socialist?
China?
Yugoslavia.
Yugoslavia. France was capitalist, right? And that's it. It had markets, but not socialism. What was the other one?
China.
Central planning and socialism. Yugoslavia, markets and socialism. So Yugoslavia is the right answer. So, okay, so now what's market socialism? What's the socialism part? What does that mean? What did Yugoslavia have that made us call it, made people call it socialist?
Ownership of the...
Yeah, they got rid of capitalists. So they had no more private ownership of the means of production. And what was the market part? Markets. So you want to envision it quickly, roughly in your head, take the United States, send the capitalists to Manhattan and cut all the bridges, right, and float it out in the ocean, get rid of private ownership, make it public ownership or make it state ownership, keep the markets, right? Keep the markets for allocation, and that's market socialism. Okay? Now let's evaluate it. You have a question?
Well, I just said that because you said market socialism, Yugoslavia, the other day in one of your talks. So I guess my question is, if you're talking about... you asked for the country, so I'm like, Yugoslavia.
You're honest, but you failed. No,
it was like 2 days ago. I'm like, hey, that's...
Nice guys finish last in my class.
No diploma for me. No. But so, if you're talking about a coordinator class taking control, isn't that not socialism? If socialism,
yes,
means...
I mean, but they call them it. If you use the word socialism to mean the people who do the work, yes. If you use the word socialism to mean the people who do the work and do the consumption, control their own lives, control the economy, et cetera, then you should not call the Yugoslavia market socialist. I don't. I call it market coordinatorist. Right? Okay. Because it has a ruling class, coordinator class. But since everybody in the world calls it market socialist, you probably have to call it market socialist and give up on the word socialism. All right, so but let's go back and ask. So I want to use the word because that's what everybody uses, and you don't want to... and also I don't want to give away the answer by calling it market coordinator. Solidarity in Yugoslavia. Solidarity in market socialism. Does it attain solidarity? What did we say was the reason why capitalism didn't attain solidarity?
Opposition.
The main thing. Well, classes, but also we pointed to an institution.
Markets.
God, this is really tough. We pointed to the institution markets, and we said capitalism doesn't generate solidarity because it has markets which pit buyers against sellers and which cause people to become individualist, greedy, self-centered, not concerned about others, because that's the only way that you can function and succeed. Market socialism, please? Does it have solidarity?
No,
because it still has markets. It has exactly the same cause of the reduction of solidarity that we pointed to as the principal one under capitalism. Now, both have another one, which is class division. Right? But leave that for a second. Equity. Market socialism. First of all, is it better than capitalism?
Yeah.
Somebody else? You already got the answer now. Just tell me why. Why is it better than capitalism?
No ownership.
Because what? Because there's no private ownership. Because we got rid of Bill Gates and all his cronies. And therefore, we did what? We took the top and we moved it down a whole lot. There is less wide distribution of income. Because we took away what is the most, the most aggravating part in creating inequality. Private ownership. That's a tremendous gain. So yes, we have more equity. Do we have equity?
No.
No. Why not? Because we still have the coordinator class. And now somebody tell me why under market socialism we still have the coordinator class? It's the only hard thing in the whole. No. Why is there a coordinator class?
Because the example you gave yesterday.
Go ahead.
People to make sure that
okay, let me try it one more time. Yeah, you're right. Let me try it one more time so people can see it. Even in the abstract, it's as if, we're born, the country starts tomorrow from nothing. And we have all these firms, and they all have workers, and all the workers can do whatever they want. But they're connected by markets, right? Now that, of course, has nothing to do with reality. In reality, you move toward market socialism from capitalism, right? And we don't have people with no minds, we have people with 2,000 years of regimentation and hierarchical organization. And we have vastly differential prior training, right? But even ignore all that, right? Ignore all that. We have these, you know, humane and capable workers with good values, all the firms. But they're competitive. So this is a firm. What's going to determine our income in this market socialist system?
Okay.
Hmm?
Market.
What do we have to do to get income?
Sell
stuff. Yeah, you have to sell stuff. And if we sell a lot of stuff, and our costs are low enough so that there's a surplus there, we get income. We get our wages out of that, and we can share the surplus. That's right. So what happens if there's a firm over on that side of the pond, and there's a firm there, and there's our firm, right? And we're selling the same thing. So what are we doing with respect to each other?
Competing.
Why? Suppose I don't want to compete. We're good people. We don't want to compete. We're gonna put in a pool, and we're gonna put in some stuff, and we're gonna work at a sensible pace, and we're gonna have a nice environment, and we're gonna sell some good stuff, and we'll get some income. What's the problem?
You're like a wobbly CEO, you're screwed.
Hmm? Well, what's one of those firms gonna do? One of them is gonna notice that if they just cut costs more than we do, and they just, you know, cut back on some of that fancy nice environment, and they do a little bit of extra advertising with a little bit of manipulation in it, they can capture more income. And then what do they do with the more income? Do they consume it all?
Reinvest.
What do they do with it? They reinvest it, and now they get some technology that they can produce the stuff more cheaply with. So now they start dropping their price, right? And what's happening to us? We're up the creek, right? We're going to be out of business. We're going to be looking for food in the gutters someplace, right? So what do? We compete. So now comes the problem, how do we compete? Right? Well, we sit around and we figure out how to screw ourselves.